Beyonce, Tinashe, welcome. I'm David Curtin. Coming up, we will hear a bit from Megan Gallagher's father and how Chief Evan Tapetet of the Kakawistahau First Nation is being honored by the Canadian Forces. We'll have that and more coming up on Meeting Ground. But first, Indigenous communities in northern Saskatchewan are another step closer to self-administered policing. During a gathering that began on October 15th, the Prince Albert Grand Council presented its regional policing study to members. Two of the study's core components were a survey and community engagement sessions. In the survey, respondents were asked to share their thoughts on current policing services in their community. More than half reported not feeling safe in their community. 75% say they believe a First Nation-led police service would meet their community's needs better than the RCMP. But these figures only represent the views of 848 people who took the survey. That's out of roughly 50,000 members within the Prince Albert Grand Council. But during its engagement sessions, which were held in 28 communities, more than 8,700 people attended to share their thoughts. That included comments on the major safety issues in their area, how policing could improve, and any setbacks they saw with developing a regional Indigenous police service. Some of the concerns raised during those sessions were the lack of RCMP officers and delayed response times. Grand Council Chief Brian Hardlott.
Because a lot of these officers, they're young officers, officers that just come out of the depot maybe, And a lot of them, the challenge is they're not Indigenous, So they come to a community, especially young officers, and they don't know the community. They don't know the culture of the community. They don't know what the values maybe, what the community are. So right off the bat, it's a challenge in the current policing system that we have. So many things like that that you hear, of course, you hear about the challenges of the community, that they tell, and sometimes maybe the RCMP don't attend to those what they tell the RCMP officers. I don't know what the reason behind that.
And solving the issue will take some time, since the lengthy recruitment process alone makes it hard to get numbers up quickly. But Hardlott says, with self-administered policing, there's an opportunity for young people to have a good career and work in communities where they understand the people. Vice Chief of the Prince Albert Grand Council, Joseph Tassani, also says he had ideas for recruiting and training police, although he didn't share any specifics at that meeting. Currently, all of the PAGC nations are policed by the RCMP, although some have community safety officers, peacekeepers, or community security guards that work alongside them. Speaking about response times, according to Hardlott, when an emergency happens in a community, he says the call is always answered in Regina rather than by the officers in the area, making help slow to come. It also doesn't help that only 10 communities within the Prince Albert Grand Council have police detachments. 8 have a detachment within 50 kilometers or less, while 3 have detachments between 50 to 100 kilometers away. None of these detachments have police officers on duty 24/7. Delayed response times were one of the issues raised by James Smith Cree Nation after Miles Sanderson killed 11 people and injured 17 back in September of 2022. Both the lack of officers and slow response times are issues that Hardlott said can be fixed with Indigenous policing. With the study's findings presented to the members, the next step is to have a final report done by March of next year. Following this report, communities now will need to give their approval to move ahead with the process.
We had the police forum here a few years back in 2018. We invited the police chiefs of self-administered policing or Indigenous police services across Canada. And their number two, I always remember, is they have to have the consent. The community members have to agree this is what we want. This type of policing. Of course, the RCMP will always be there, but we want to include a self-administered policing, the First Nations, and the other thing that the police chiefs at that time said was, one of the challenges was funding, whether it's from the federal government or the provincial government, but funding has always been a challenge.
Vice Chief Joseph Tassani says Grand Chief Brian Hardlott is right. The project doesn't move without support from the communities.
There has to be buy-in from the communities. The leadership has to. We're not forcing this. This is the initiative from our communities. It's not one day we woke up, the Grand Council decided to do this. It's grassroots request that we take this initiative. So when the report is done, communities will need to provide their band council resolutions to approval to move ahead. And at the end of the day, if communities decide this is not for them, then that is their choice. I can't. It's not my decision to force that onto communities. The communities will have the decision in terms of how they want to see community safety done in their community.
Hardlott says work will begin on negotiating funding, but he isn't concerned about securing the money.
It's not a worry to the chief and councils. It's not a worry to the police chief that the funding is going to be secure. It's going to be there.
A decision will also need to be made on which policing model should be adopted.
Whether it's a tribal council model.
In that model, the tribal council model, the Grand Council itself would be responsible for running the police service. Hardlott says in that instance, the head office would likely be in Prince Albert, with smaller offices located in communities that opt into the model. The other option is an individual model. That's where a First Nation would have its own police force. The only one in Saskatchewan right now is the File Hills First Nations Police Service. But in that instance, Hardlott says the Prince Albert Grand Council would still help these communities, help them with negotiating for funding.
We will still help them, the individual First Nation.
Regardless of which model is chosen, Grand Council Vice Chief Joseph Tassani says it needs to meet communities' approval.
The product, I kind of see it as a product, right? We're out there, develop a product, present it back to us, and to see if it's worth something. So if we bring it back and if it's something that's going to hurt our communities more, I would assume that the communities will reject it. So we have to make sure that it's something we're not set up to fail. We put our numbers right. We put our people right. Projections, having enough to meet today's needs. I know the challenge with recruitment and training of police is challenging right across the country. That is something that we're keeping our eye on, and we do have some ideas moving forward on meeting some of those gaps.
Vice Chief Tassani says one thing's for sure, status quo won't do.
You know, sometimes we feel like we're not getting anywhere with our community challenges and safety and policing in our community. It seems like frustration is there. You feel it right across the country. But I think with our inclusion, with our approach in terms of community safety ideas, the potential it has, it's huge. And I think by working together, sharing ideas, not in silos, because that creates so much problems and challenges in itself. And I truly believe under the Grand Council, the model that I hope that we implement is under the Grand Council. And then by pooling resources, ideas, I think we can be a lot better to respond to today's challenges.
Coming up, important historical artifacts at the Vatican will soon be on their way back to First Nations communities in Canada. I'm David Curtin, and this is Meeting Ground. We're going to be talking about this in the weeks to come. But in the past week, a jury found Roderick Sutherland guilty of manslaughter, unlawful confinement, and offering an indignity to human remains in the murder of Megan Gallagher from Saskatoon. Gallagher's father, Brian, and stepmother, Deb, have spoken at numerous events for families of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and two-spirited people. During this trial, the final one of the nine people initially charged in Megan's death, her family finally heard details how Megan was kidnapped, tortured, and killed. Court heard she was tied to a chair, tortured, beaten, her face wrapped in plastic and killed in Sutherland's garage 5 years ago. After years of pain, Megan's family says the guilty verdict brings relief but not closure. Brian Gallagher stood surrounded by loved ones at the courthouse.
The only closure that we could ever get is if Megan was to walk through the door and give us a hug share a meal with us, share a Christmas, share a Thanksgiving.
Brian says his daughter was joyful and compassionate and would do anything to help others.
She was a joyful spirit. She was humorous. She was compassionate beyond belief. As I've said many times before, she would give her last cigarette to you.
I'm hoping to talk to Brian about all of this very, very soon. Now, though, the family hopes this verdict does spark change in how Indigenous people are treated within the legal system. There are some who are refusing now to call it a justice system because there was no justice in this, instead calling it a legal system. Indigenous Services Minister Mandy Galmasti is trying to defend her department after a damning Auditor General's report. Auditor General Karen Hogan says Indigenous Services Canada is falling far behind on its efforts to address long-standing health and infrastructure problems in First Nations communities. In a report released last week, Auditor General Karen Hogan says despite an 84% increase in spending since 2019, Indigenous Services Canada continues to struggle to expand access to clean drinking water and emergency services in those First Nations communities.
Sustained focus from Indigenous Services Canada to rethink how it delivers programs while collaborating with First Nations to improve their capacity is an important step to resolving these persistent issues, improve outcomes, and advanced reconciliation.
She says 20 years after first raising concerns about First Nations access to clean drinking water, 35 long-term drinking water advisories remain in place. 9 of them have been active for more than a decade. She says the department has failed to implement roughly half of the recommendations her office has made between 2015 and 2022. The auditor says many of the recommendations issued to the department over the years align with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's call to action and the final report into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Hogan says Indigenous Services Canada needs sustained focus, those are her words, to design how it delivers programs and to collaborate with First Nations to improve their capacity and advance reconciliation. The Vatican plans to return a few dozen artifacts sought by Indigenous communities in Canada. It's part of settling the Catholic Church's role in helping to suppress Indian culture throughout the Americas, basically throughout Turtle Island. Interestingly, we do get this report, this information from American reporter Chuck Siverton.
The items were taken from Indigenous peoples during colonial periods. Negotiations on returning them ramped up after Pope Francis in 2022 met with Indigenous leaders to apologize for the Church's role in Canada's disastrous residential schools. They were shown some of the items, including wampum belts, war clubs, and masks, and asked for them to be returned.
The Vatican insists the items were, quote, gifts to Pope Pius XI. Who wanted to celebrate the Church's global reach, its missionaries, and the lives of the Indigenous peoples they have evangelized. And now the Assembly of First Nations says it's talking to the Vatican Museum about the repatriation. National Chief Cindy Woodhouse-Nipinak says there are still a number of logistical issues that need to be addressed before the items can be returned, including protocols to ensure their safe transfer. Woodhouse-Nipinak says the items held in the museum are living sacred pieces and must be treated as such. She says the work is very important to First Nations communities, which have been calling for their return for years. When he was in Canada, Woodhouse-Nipinak thanked the late Pope Francis for his work to advance the repatriation of those sacred items. The Pope was in Canada back in 2022 to apologize for the Church's role in residential schools. The Canadian Forces Snowbirds have named the Aerobatic Squadron's first Indigenous Honorary Colonel. Chief Evan Tapetat of Kakawistaha First Nation has been named an Honorary Colonel of 431 Air Demonstration Squadron, based in Moose Jaw. Tapetat served in Afghanistan. He retired as a captain. Honorary Air Force colonels mentor the commanding officer and members of the unit. They build relationships with other units, and they help ensure the maintenance of customs and traditions. Congratulations, Colonel Tapetat. Sounds like Danielle Smith's people have been making some unofficial phone calls to First Nations in British Columbia. BC Premier David Eby says a pipeline plan by the Alberta Premier threatens the social license that allows other major projects along his province's north coast to move forward. Eby says he doesn't believe Smith's pipeline will be built, but her actions risk upsetting the fragile consensus over resource development in the region, one he hopes to strengthen.
The Premier of Alberta struck a crown corporation, began calling coastal First Nations, whose support we rely on for billions of dollars of projects, saying this is coming. And then they're calling me and saying, is this coming? What's happening? If you do this, all your other projects we're going to have to review because of the impacts on the coast.
Smith has said the BC Premier's rejection of her pipeline pitch is un-Canadian and unconstitutional. While Eby says his province is advancing $40 billion worth of real projects that will employ people from across the country. A pair of writers from Manitoba are among the fiction finalists for the Governor General's Literary Awards, and they are both Indigenous. The novel Real Ones by Red River Métis author and poet Katharina Vermette is about two Michif sisters whose mother is accused of falsely claiming Indigenous heritage. Another of the five finalists for the English Language Fiction Prize is Small Ceremonies by Kyle Edwards from Lake Manitoba First Nation. It's about a hockey team of Ojibwe high schoolers. 70 finalists across seven categories in English and French have been announced. 14 winners are set to be announced November 6th. Well, that's it for this week. Now remember, Meeting Ground can be heard every Saturday at 5 and Sundays at noon, or anytime on our podcast. And you can get that at CKOM or CJME.com. Miigwech, Marcy, and thank you for letting me on your radio, or whatever device. I'm David Curtin.